Hi, this is Dean Bocobo. We'll be reading a letter from Jose Rizal, writing to his parents from Barcelona in Spain. In just a little while. But first, a little guitar from Michael Dada. Barcelona, the 23rd of June, 1882. My dear parents and brothers, I have the pleasure to write you today, the eve of the town fiesta there in Calamba, a memorable day for me, although it is not the day of the departure of the mail boat. My last letter, dated in the must have informed you of the incidents of my trip. It remains for me then to relate what happened after that. We arrived at this important city, Port Said, that partakes much of Africa and Europe. Commercial, gay, and quite beautiful, but on the other hand, dirty and corrupt. There is a café musical where an orchestra, an excellent one, according to those who know, plays the national songs of the different European countries, like the Marseillaise, God Save the Queen, and others. Its population is most heterogeneous: European, Turks, Greeks, Egyptians, and Negroes. A variety of fruits. The date about all. Elegant stores with signs in French, Italian, Greek, and others. And dirty and dark booths adorn its animated streets. We were here for about 3 hours. At the beginning, the sailing was good. We passed opposite Greece, the island of Candia, on the 10th. With good weather, we sighted the coast of Italy. The first town we saw was a very beautiful beach, which at that time a train was crossing. Thence, the sailing was very pleasant on account of the beauty of the Italian coasts, thickly populated and well cultivated, presenting a picturesque aspect, full of life and poetry, that resembled a Belen on account of its many houses and little trees. On the same afternoon of the 10th, we passed through the Strait of Messina, with a sea so smooth that we didn't notice a single wave. We saw the volcanoes, Stromboli and Etna and other islands, Sicily and Naples, even if we have not yet passed them, appeared before our eyes, bathed in the beautiful rays of the afternoon sun. The following day at dawn, Naples appeared to us, Napoli, a gigantic city which lays asleep beside Vesuvius, a volcano that seems to be guarding this wonderful city. Its extent from Pasilipo Mountain until the other extreme, all populated, would be the same as from the town of Calamba until beyond Los Baños. Elegant edifices like that of the Royal Palace, the Castle of Sant'Antelmo, or Saint Telmo. Numerous hotels, the Tower of Massaniello, and the lugubrious state prison. We were not allowed more than 1 hour to go ashore, which I spent visiting Napoli at the risk of being left behind. Those of us who went ashore were four, and accompanied by a cicerone, we went around the city. It was the first European city I passed through. From pleasure to pleasure, from surprise surprise to surprise, in an elegant coach, guided by a cicerone who spoke French, I went through those streets, carefully paved with large black flat paving stones, and crossed by streetcars. Statues, fountains, monuments, arches erected here and there, very tall houses, stores and show windows glittering for the lavish use of gilt and crystal attract the attention of the traveler, above all if he comes from the colonies. A throng that speak a melodious language come and go continually. Elegant ladies and gentlemen walk through the streets. At the street corners are announcements or notices to the Freemasonry of the whole world concerning the death of Garibaldi. Giuseppe Garibaldi, Italian patriot who labored for the unification of his native country. I went to the telegraph station with various orders, and afterwards, in 20 minutes, we went around the city, the Posillipo, various churches vyingly full of statues, squares with antique marble statues or copies of them, like those of Apollo, Faunus, Orestes, equestrian statues, the Fountain of the Four Seasons, represented by four superb lions, a museum of antiquities from Herculaneum and Pompeii. How sorry I am not to be able to stop to see it, study it, examine it more closely, and a little more carefully. Almost one moment more and the boat would leave me behind. But all this magnificent panorama cost me much, because coachman and cicerone cheated me, charging me 4 times more than the agreed price. On the boat I found many peddlers of lava from Vesuvius, made into elegant lockets and other jewels, views of Naples, and on the water alongside the boat were 2 divers or swimmers who, less aristocratic than the Negroes of Aden or Aden, were satisfied with fishing out small copper coins drawn far away into the water. When I compared these 2 good Italian lads with the Negroes of Aden, with kinky hair, I couldn't help but indulge in serious reflections. Also in a boat came 2 Italian women and 2 men. The women with guitars and bandores, and the men with violins to play for us, singing in sweet and melodious voice several opera selections and the Addio a Napoli. They received with an open umbrella all kinds of money thrown to them by the passengers. 4 or 5 minutes after my arrival, we left Napoli, and I became the butt of the questions of my fellow passengers who repented for not having gone ashore. Here we learned through the newspapers about the occurrences in Alexandria and Cairo, the massacre of Europeans that took place when we were in the canal. In my previous letter, I must have told you something about my conversation with a physician, a partisan of Arabi Pasha, probably in the know of what was then being plotted. But the gentleman didn't let anything leak out, and in the canal we were calm and peaceful. From Napoli, we sailed almost the whole day within sight of Italy, but the Mistral blew and gave us good jolts. The following day, the 12th, we passed near Corsica, native land of Napoleon. Its coasts were less populated, more mountainous and wild. They have much to envy the Italian coasts with regard to land development. In the beginning, in the evening, and after enough strutting, and with a cold that compelled me to accept the shawl of Mrs. Salazar, despite my frock coat and vest, we saw the lighthouse of Marseille. By this time, the sun set at about 7 o'clock, and as the twilight was very long, it was still daylight by 8:30. Thus, the coasts of France, which since 5 o'clock were vaguely outlined in the distance, would have appeared to us more beautiful had it not been for the wavering light of dusk. In the evening then, at about 10 or 11 o'clock, we dropped anchor. because it was forbidden to enter. Before us, among several islands, stood the celebrated castle of If, a city viewed at night with beacons of different colors and electric lights that seemed to wander from one place to another, seemed to be a monster with a thousand restless and distrustful eyes. We deferred then for the next day our curiosity. I am condemned to see cities at sunrise, which surprise a traveler who sees a pleasant thing suddenly and not gradually. It is needless to give you a description of Marseille, because all that I can say about very big ships, forests of masts, poles and chimneys, boats, buildings, churches, etc., all will be pale and cold, colder than the cold we felt then. I was on deck with my frock coat and gloves and waiting eagerly for the permit to go down. Hear farewells, meetings, tears, instructions in French everywhere. Boatmen, porters who salute you very politely and offer you their services. Wicked money. At last, my turn came to bid goodbye. Those who had become my new friends and acquaintances, foreigners and Spaniards, who gave me their cards and pictures. And followed by a boatman, I went ashore to the custom house. French politeness is evident even among the customs officers, who begged for pardon before searching me with all possible consideration. Taking a coach, a coupe, I went to the Grand Hotel Noailles, located on Rue Canebière. This is one of the best hotels, if not the best, in Marseille, with all the comforts, carpeted marble staircase, hydraulic elevators for going up and down all the floors without having to lift one foot, servants attired in dress coat with white necktie, clean and elegant carpeted rooms with dressing tables, velvet chairs with spring, electric bells, imperial bedsteads. In short, excellent service. I had one of those rooms for 4 francs a day without board, but it must be noted that here even the candle is paid for separately. On account of the excessive cold that penetrated everywhere, I had to keep my room, which is full of embroidered curtains and carpeted, always closed. I was in Marseille 2.5 days, but I got bored staying in my room alone, accustomed as I was to many people. Many of the passengers were lodged in the hotel. I strolled through those wide and clean streets, paved like those in Manila and full of people, attracting the attention of everybody who called me Chinese, Japanese, American, etc. But no one called me Filipino. Poor country, no one has heard of you. This is the most elegant city that I have seen, and it is cultured and rich with respect to its houses. The majority of these are decorated with statues, caryatids, bunches of flowers, sphinxes, busts, etc., etc., large, admirable for their richness in crystal and marble, elegantly combined. The fact is, nobody looked out the window on account of the cold. I was about the only one who stepped out on the balcony. The stores have their glass doors closed so that the cold may not get in, and at first, I didn't enter them believing that it was prohibited to do so. Almost all the articles displayed to the public have their prices beside them, and it must be noted that everything is inexpensive. But many people moved about. There were vendors of fruits, newspapers, and flowers. There were booths where oysters, mussels, and shrimps were sold. The sidewalks of Rue Canebière are as wide as an ordinary street, and I was much struck that one enters a place with very elegant signs in gilt and crystal, the like of which cannot be found in Manila, and finds himself in a passable cafe. Magical garden with its lions, bears, panthers, elephants, and a carabao. I was not able to see many animals because that was a very big place and I got tired. There was a department for monkeys from all parts of the world. There were some that resembled human beings, attending their hands to you as if asking about your health. The Museum of Natural History didn't escape my curiosity. I saw also the panorama, which is a circular building. You go inside and you see dead soldiers beside a cannon, and they seem to be sculpture. And you come to a place where you see on all sides a real siege with cavalry, with soldiers surrendering their arms, skirmishes, etc. Everything there is an illusion. You think such a horse is moving, that the dead man is kicking, that the smoke of the fire is rising, that the howitzer is striking the snow of the distant mountain, far horizons, the snow, the chief who is shouting. So that we got into a discussion as to whether all of these were paintings or sculpture. Being there without looking through a cosmorama, you feel as if you are on the battlefield itself. The whole place is a continuous field, and the rogues even offer you binoculars in order to see better. I left Marseille by express train on the afternoon of the 5th, because all the trains that go from Marseille to Barcelona are express. The ticket is very cheap, 12 pesos and 3 pesetas, first class. You travel at full speed of from 5 to 6 leagues per hour, a measure of distance varying for different times and countries, from 3.9 to 7.4 kilometers per league. By boat, the trip costs almost as much, and it's more uncomfortable. We were going at such speed that when we met trains running in the opposite direction, it was physically impossible to look at them because your head would turn around. That was infernal. It seemed like lightning, a monster, a shooting star. We went through tunnels, or rather mountains, one of which was very long, that at the speed we were going, I believed we made it in more than 5 minutes. At one stop, I was much frightened. A stop of 30 minutes was announced. I went down for some necessity, and after 5 minutes, I saw the train pulling out, taking along my luggage with my money in it. I ran after it. I didn't overtake it. Fortunately, a gendarme informed me that it would return soon and that it would only change tracks. After that, I didn't go down again. The towns and countrysides that we pass by are precious. Every inch of land is well cultivated and used for vineyards, olive trees, and planted to wheat and barley. France is thickly populated. For along the way, there were houses almost without interruption until the Spanish boundary. We passed by the following towns and cities: Pade, Gameux, Régisson, Saint-Chamin, Miramar, Tarascon, Le Caillat, Aymar, Porlin, Montpellier, Sète, Narbonne, Perpignan, Cerbère. We spent the night in France. At dawn, we arrived at the Spanish frontier town, Portbou. There, we had to change trains. Before that, we were searched at the custom house by the Spanish carabinier. Missing were the courtesy and polish of the French. But on the other hand, we had a delicious breakfast in a beautiful and pleasant room. Here can be seen posters in Spanish and French. Seems that one is in Manila, for one sees Spanish Castilian phrases and one hears Spanish spoken. From here in another train, we came to Barcelona, passing also through 2, 3, or 4, or 5 tunnels, one of which was quite long. Much work has been put into it, and according to the commander of the Navy, this Spanish line that goes to France is the best. Although the country is perfectly cultivated, it is less populated than France. At the frontier, we saw a frontier lad. He was wearing a costume half French and half Spanish, a clergyman's cap, Catalan fiber sandals. That symbolism was funny, graphic, and significant. The towns we passed were Portbou, Llanza, Villajuiga, Perelada, Figueras, Villamalla, Tonya, San Miguel, San Jordi, Flassa, Bordiles, Celra, Gerona, Fornells, Rio de Lotes, Caldas, Sils, Tordera, Blanes, Malgrat, Galela, Arenis, Caldetas, Mataro, Permia, Masno, Mongat, Madalona. It was about 12 o'clock when we arrived at Barcelona. My first impression of Barcelona was very unpleasant. After having seen Napoli and Marseille, I found the city poor and vulgar. Its streets were dirty, its houses of poor architecture. In short, I saw everything in an unfavorable light, with the exception of the women, who seemed to me more beautiful than the women of Marseille. I was very much disappointed, especially when we arrived at the hotel, where the service and accommodation were so poor that my companion, Mr. Bouil, chief of the telegraph office, said, quote, "To come from Hotel Noailles and then drop on this." I was very sad above all when I looked for the persons to whom I was recommended and I couldn't find them. I was not able to see a single countryman, and on account of the large expenses I had had in my trip and the many cheatings I suffered, only 12 pesos remained to me. At last I found the Jesuit fathers, who received me well and showed me an inexpensive and Christian house where I got board and room for 21 pesos a month. When I reached the hotel, my companion, having received a telegram, had left hurriedly, carrying my coat in which I kept my passport, my gloves, and I don't know what else, and in exchange he left me many of his things. I learned that he had been informed of something serious when I saw the telegram on the table. Then I too left the hotel hurriedly, and in less than an hour my little money was further reduced by the dishonest hotel keeper, the coachman, and the porter, who overcharged me. I moved to the house indicated to me by the Jesuit fathers, and when the people there learned how much I had spent and paid the rogues, they exclaimed, "You have been terribly cheated." In fact, they had taken advantage of you, being a tyro, unquote. Only 7 pesos remained to me. As I looked at the house to which I had moved, modest, humid, dark, and poorly ventilated, located on San Severo Street, a dirty and old alley, as I looked at the brick floor of my room, the straw chairs, the hard and not so tidy bed, not a mirror, an old and broken wash basin placed on a stand made of 4 pieces of iron. I, accustomed to luxury and comfort, at least for the last 40 days, became intensely dispirited and sad, and more than ever with deep sorrow, I remembered our house, which is 1,000 times more decent than that. Then 1,000 sad thoughts invaded my mind upon finding myself in that world, hitherto unknown to me, without friends, without relatives, especially when the landlord came, for until then I had met only the landlady, a good and gentle woman. He was rough, coarse, ugly in appearance. When I saw priests come out from all the rooms and heard everywhere the harsh Catalan language, supper consisted of nothing more than a dish of vegetables and another of fish. I called the attention of the priests, the only guests of that house, and I observed that underneath that rough exterior, a good disposition was hidden. Little by little, those clouds were dissipated, and they treated me with more consideration, especially a priest who had come from Cuba. Ah, I forgot to say that, having learned at the Jesuit college that Cuesta was boarding in the same house, I hurriedly went there to see my countryman, but I couldn't talk with him because he had left for Manresa. I stayed then at that house to await him, and also for reasons of economy. The following day, provided with a map of the city, I began walking through the streets of that labyrinth to look for my countrymen. Some were still sleeping. I went to the hospital to wait for them, and there, and after waiting a long time, I was shown the house of a countryman. I found Cabangis, and since then I have had better days. Successively, I found the others, who received me very well, who found for me decent and cheaper houses. I met Cuesta, who returned from Manresa. In short, since then until the present, I like Barcelona, and I'm getting to like it more and more. At present, I occupy a room on the 3rd floor of a building on Sitges Street, No. 3, together with Cabangis and other good students, who are refined and courteous. I'm well served by a landlady whose name is Doña Silvestra, who always says to me, "Don Pepe, do you want something? Have you already an appetite?" And so on. I have somewhat written at length about certain things in order to portray to you the impressions and situations of a newcomer. Now I know Barcelona a little, and it seems to me large and pretty, and I remember Marseille and Napoli as a glittering and vanished dream. I'm beginning to discover in this city gems and riches, pretty and elegant houses of varied architecture. Arabic, and Greco-Roman. I'm getting used to it and I regard it with pleasure. The Jesuit fathers lent me money in case I should lack some and something happened to me. I have gone through their college and I'm making a study of various things to apply them there when I return. I visited a porcelain factory, which I like very much, and I intend to visit another of glass, clay, etc. Here I found many things which are applicable there. When some of you want to write me, which I hope you'll do, every mailboat, address me thus. Mr. Jose Rizal, number 3, 3rd floor, Sitges Street, Barcelona, España.